We start today with another tragic story of a Republican official getting caught voting illegally. Why? Well, because we know that allegations are confessions in Republican world. Look at this. Judge rules Georgia Republican Party vice chairman voted illegally, voting 9 times while serving probation for felony forgery charges. We're talking about Brian K. Pritchard. And a judge did indeed rule a couple of days ago that the first ever vice chairman of the Georgia Republican Party, how esteemed, huh? Violated state election laws when he voted 9 times while serving probation for a felony check forgery sentence. Now, not only is he the vice chairman of the Georgia Republican Party, but he's also a conservative talk show host. I know. His punishment, oh, look at this. It will be a $5,000 fine and a public reprimand from the state election board, according to the decision by administrative law judge Lisa Boggs. Pritchard previously alleged that the 2020 election was fraudulent, but he has been found to have voted illegally. So, few different things. First of all, $5,000 fine and a reprimand. They've locked people up for accidentally voting as felons. And he is going to get a $5,000 fine. What about losing the right to vote in future elections because we have criminals voting in this country who aren't supposed to vote? Oh, this is different. This is different. This is the vice chairman of the esteemed Georgia Republican Party. This guy knew what he was doing, and it's a slap on the wrist. And there are essentially, how many stories are there here? I guess there's in a sense, 3 stories. Story number one, it continues to be that while Republicans are the loudest ones yelling about Democratic voter fraud, it continues to be Republicans that get caught voting illegally. Anecdotally, in no cases, left, right, is this significant enough to change election outcomes other than that one case that Ken Block told us about, a local race. So story number one is they are accusing and they are the ones doing. Number two, we see drastically different punishments for those who do this, sometimes on purpose, sometimes accidentally. Part of that has to do with which state that it happened and what other information is there, aggravating factors, mitigating factors, so on and so forth. And then, of course, number three, big picture, our elections continue to be secure and trustworthy, whether you're voting in person or by mail or whatever. And to the extent that they aren't, it's because of wild ideas that right wingers get. Ballot harvesting, intimidation at polling places. We've seen it all. So Brian K. Pritchard, 9 times voting illegally while claiming the 2020 election was fraudulently stolen by Joe Biden. Will these people ever stop? I don't know. Probably not. Larry David is increasingly the target of right wingers because Larry David doesn't give an F anymore. And he is straight up saying the Trumpists are disgusting. I don't care if they don't like my show, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Go away. You make no difference to me. And this is really riling up a lot of right wingers, including Charlie Kirk. Now, this is going to be a very instructive clip that I'm going to play. I've talked before about right wing anti-Semitism and left wing anti-Semitism. There's lots of anti-Semitism across the political spectrum. I'm going to give you an example here of right wing anti-Semitism, which is just typical playing on Jewish tropes of Jews all being complaining Woody Allen types. And that's literally what Charlie Kirk says about Larry David. Now, I just want to remind you the reason that they are so angry with Larry David, you know, season 1, 2, 3 of Curb, far less political. It was funny. Larry David's hilarious. Seinfeld. We love it. Now that Larry David is becoming much more political as the show winds down, Curb Your Enthusiasm, now they're furious. Now he's not funny. And now Charlie Kirk is playing up anti-Semitic tropes. Take a listen and then we'll discuss this.
Man, he's really lost his fastball. That's Larry David, who used to be a really funny guy. People would ask, you know, Charlie, do you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm? I never liked Larry David.
Right.
He is not the brains of the operation of Seinfeld. It's obviously Jerry or somebody else. He's a baby. He's sick. Larry David, you perfectly just showed us exactly what is going on tonight at this New York fundraiser. This is the Upper East crew. Tonight, around 4 or 5 p.m., you might as well just close down the streets. There will be a parade of these miserable Upper East Side zealots that have a lot of money. The lords of easy money, connected to Wall Street, hedge fund, titans of all sorts of industry. And they're just going to go right down Park Avenue. They're going to go right down Fifth Avenue to the New York City Radio Hall to have in their own mind a religious experience. Mm. Tonight is essentially group therapy. Tonight is essentially $100,000, $250,000 for group therapy. Be among the other mentally deranged people in New York that live very shallow lives. You know what's really interesting is it's obvious that ever since Donald Trump came on the scene, Larry David is not as happy of a person as he once was. He's really never been that happy. I think he's an atheist. He's snarky. He's your typical kind of New York Woody Allen type that is constantly complaining and is, you know, thinks he could be really funny. By the way, that clip, he's a baby.
These are all coded anti-Semitic tropes. Every single one of them. Every single one. So this is a great opportunity to talk about right-wing anti-Semitism versus left-wing anti-Semitism. There is overlap between the two, but they are different. Right-wing anti-Semitism is often much more ethno-nationalist. It's rooted in either white supremacy or white nationalist ideologies. The idea that Jews are an other, they threaten racial purity, they threaten national purity. It's more Nazi-like. Right-wing anti-Semitism is more traditionally Nazi-like. The conspiracy theories from the right-wing anti-Semites tend to be about, sometimes they call it ZOG, Zionist Occupied Government, or a conspiracy for Jewish control of the world, including specific industries, as Charlie Kirk alludes, titans of industry and Wall Street and this and that. Holocaust denial tends to be right-wing anti-Semitism, either denying altogether or diminishing the severity of the Holocaust in order to undermine Jewish history and suffering. There are also cultural preservation claims. We saw this like when I interviewed Richard Spencer, where Jews, some of them might pass as white people, but Jews undermine traditional values and national identity and cultural homogeneity. And then religious bigotry is often there as well. Now, it's important to know a lot of the anti-Semitism against Jews, left and right, is not religiously oriented. Jews are an ethno-religious group. So there may be religious bigotry, but there may not be. Now, on the other hand, we have left-wing anti-Semitism. Left-wing anti-Semitism often is shrouded in a critique of so-called global capitalism, blaming Jews for the problems associated with capitalism, the financial crises, economic inequality. It draws on stereotypes of Jewish greed or control. Again, overlap with the right. The right doesn't criticize capitalism. The left will sometimes criticize capitalism and include in that, entrench in that, left-wing anti-Semitism. Cultural and institutional power tropes. The left-wing anti-Semites will sometimes allege, oh, Jews have disproportionate influence in politics and media and other power structures. Similar to the right, but different. It's its own thing. And an interesting one that's exclusive to left-wing anti-Semitism is the misuse of intersectionality. We saw this with the Women's March. We've seen it with Black Lives Matter to a degree. Leftist circles that talk about intersectionality, but say, oh, no, Jewish issues are minimized or ignored altogether because of perceived Jewish privilege. So Jewish strife is often marginalized or dismissed by left-wing anti-Semitism within the social justice movements. And then also sometimes we see a moral double standard when it comes to American Jews from the left-wing anti-Semites. You often see this with regard to Israel painting American Jews with the brush of Israeli domestic policy and demanding answers and denouncements and this sort of thing. Something that when the right does it with Muslims, left-wingers correctly criticize it, then they apply it to Jews. So important to understand Charlie Kirk's example here, classic right-wing anti-Semitism We also have left-wing anti-Semitism, overlap, but certainly two different categories. Ladies and gentlemen, you did it. You made my third children's book a bestseller. The book, Think Like a Voter, which I have right here in front of me, has reached the number one spot for children's government books on Amazon. It's genuinely nuts that this has happened again. I can't thank people enough who have been buying the book. And remember, if you bought it, please review it, whether it's Kindle or paperback, review the book. It really helps us. The trilogy is now available. The first book was about critical thinking, Think Like a Detective. These are for kids, by the way. But if you're an adult who would benefit from it, by all means, Think Like a Detective was the first book. Think Like a Scientist, the second book. And now it's an election year. Think Like a Voter, the third book. You can get all three of them at davidpakman.com/book. Review the book. Critical. Review the book. And let me also mention, 3 weeks ago, we very quietly, they call it a soft launch in the business. I don't know what business, but they call it a soft launch. We soft launched weekend written op-eds through our Substack newsletter. So in addition to the Monday to Friday audio visual content, if you're on our Substack newsletter, on the weekends, we now are putting out an op-ed in written form. Sometimes people write to me, they say, sir, please turn some of your commentaries into written form so I can share them and give them to people who don't listen to podcasts. We're doing it. So two or three have already gone out. The third, fourth, and fifth are going out on the following weekends. This is free, okay? Just go to davidpakman.com and get on the newsletter. You'll see the sign up in the upper right. And by the way, if you want to support expanding the written content, you can become a Substack premium subscriber, totally separate from website membership. If you like audiovisual, the bonus content is at joinpakman.com. If you like text, letters and punctuation marks and all of those sorts of things, that's the Substack premium newsletter. And you can find that on Substack, and you can get on it at davidpakman.com. So let's take a very quick break. We have an explosive program for you today. We'll be back right after this. So many people in our audience have become fans of our sponsor, Ounce of Hope. Ounce of Hope is a cannabis farm that ships CBD and psychoactive THC products to your door anywhere in the U.S. This is federally legal. THCA, THC Delta 8 and 9, they have edibles. And now you can check out the brand new drink from Ounce of Hope for 2024, the Berry High 5 milligram THC Seltzer. It's the only 16-ounce THC seltzer on the market. It's only $5, a price no one can beat. At their cannabis farm in Memphis, Ounce of Hope sustainably raises fish to feed local homeless people. I've always thought it's a really cool operation. Besides the delicious seltzer, they have gummies, chocolate, Rice Krispie treats, caramels, topicals, oils, soft gels, you name it. Ounce of Hope grows, extracts, and formulates all of these world-class products in-house, so that you can trust the safety and quality of every product that arrives at your door. So whether you're looking for a little help sleeping at night, something for aches and pains, a way to unwind on the weekend, Ounce of Hope can help you out if you are over 21. And right now you can pick up their Berry High 5 milligram THC seltzers for $5 each at ounceofhope.com. No one can beat that price. And aside from their drinks, you'll get 20% off everything else when you use the code PAKMAN. That's ounceofhope.com. Pick up one of their THC seltzers for just $5. Use the code PAKMAN to get 20% off everything else. The info is in the podcast notes. The David Pakman Show continues to be made possible by our audience, people who listen to the podcast, watch some clips on YouTube, or maybe listen on the radio, watch on Free Speech TV. The primary source for our funding is the membership program available at joinpakman.com. I encourage you to join. You can get a sizable discount off of the cost of a membership, monthly or yearly, using the coupon code SAVEDEMOCRACY24. It all happens at joinpakman.com. Let's go to the phones Discord, right? I mean, they're not phones anymore, but let's hear from some people in the audience as we like to do on the Friday show. Our Discord can be found at davidpakman.com/discord. And it's very straightforward. I encourage you to partake in it. Let's start today. Let's start today with Josh from Colorado. Josh, let's hope for an auspicious start. We will pray to the gods of the technical problems and hope we don't have one. What's going on today?
David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Wonderful. Been a long-time listener here, and I'm pretty stoked to get on the show. Thanks for picking me.
Well, what's on your mind?
Yeah. I just have a simple question, kind of with that whole, you know, the Gaza-Israel thing. I know some people who are on the left, and they're pretty set in their ways of the whole, oh, Biden just wants to, you know, genocide everybody who's Muslim in Gaza, which I don't believe at all. And I think it's a complicated situation. He's doing a pretty decent job, not perfect, but pretty decent. What do you think you can kind of talk to people like that on the left and kind of get them out of that mindset? Do you have any advice?
Honestly, I don't know what you can do. You know, often people have such misinformation or lack of information attached very deeply on this issue that, I mean, you know, Biden wants to genocide all the Muslims in Gaza. Biden's the president of the United States. Like, first, we've got to separate that out and even say what Biden's not even in charge. What are you talking about? And it's hours of conversation. And honestly, it's probably some of the most frustrating conversation I can imagine. So I can't say I recommend to people to do it. But if you want to, I'd start by asking people where they even are getting their information and what their underlying beliefs of the history of the region are. I'd probably start there.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. It's just frustrating because I just feel like there's so many people that I know who are leftists who just have that viewpoint. And I just don't get it. It's kind of like, yeah. Do you think Biden really thinks that when he has, you know, they talked about how could they get rid of Netanyahu? You know, I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
It's wild. And then the next layer would be to take an action that helps Trump get in rather than Biden, because you're upset with Biden. Given that if your concern is the Palestinian people, Trump will be a complete and overt disaster. So why on earth would you do that, you know?
No, exactly. And that's where I try to rebuke that. It's like, OK, so then we vote for Trump, the man who right. said either who gives a crap about it or let's just blow up Gaza. Like, that's a better response, in your opinion, than Biden?
Terrible. Terrible. Nope. That's you're absolutely right in questioning the sanity of that decision.
Yeah. All right. And I have this one quick follow up. I'm just curious what you think about this. What's your concern about the whole IVF topic at this point? Do you think this is something that'll become another Supreme Court kind of dystopian decision, or you think it's going to kind of stop where it is right now?
The reason I'm optimistic that it's going to stop is that I think sane Republicans recognize it makes no sense to restrict access to IVF, and that's what you're going to do if you declare that embryos have personhood. And they know the disaster that the overturning of Roe v. Wade has been for them. So I think that there's enough sane Republicans that realize that this is a bad idea for them, that they're not going to make it into the next abortion battle.
Yeah, that's good. That's kind of what I think, too. I mean, I feel like it's how likely are they to die on the Hill and lose even more of what they already have, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
So, that's all I had, David. I got to
right,
get back to
Josh
work here.
From
Thank
Colorado.
You so much for picking me.
Thanks so much. Great to hear from you. Very much appreciate it. Why don't we go next to Heckler from New York City? Heckler from New York City, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today? Heckler, you probably have the wrong audio device selected.
Hey, David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. I had a question for you. I know I'm by no means a Trump supporter, and I know that you call out a lot of Trump's gaffes at his public speaking events and whatnot. Do you think that if Biden spoke publicly as much as Trump, he would have a similar amount of gaffes, or what is your take there?
Well, first of all, the idea that Biden doesn't speak publicly, I sort of take issue with. Just this week, multiple speeches. You know, then people will say, well, but he uses a teleprompter. Well, so does Trump, you know. So I think I maybe am not totally on board with the premise of your question, but I really on this defer to the experts and the medical experts we've interviewed. And we actually have another forthcoming interview on this. Gaffes are not all the same thing. Biden stuttering or struggling with the speech on the teleprompter, or sometimes just kind of trailing off when he makes a joke that doesn't land. It's different than when Trump will repeat that Nikki Haley was in charge of security in January 6, 2021 in Washington, D.C., or when Trump repeats that Viktor Orban is the leader of Turkey. And you can tell that it's not a verbal mistake. It's what he believes. And he's basing subsequent statements on these false beliefs. What the medical experts have told us when we've interviewed them is that these are two different things and they mean very different things cognitively. So I just kind of defer to them on that.
Awesome. I appreciate your perspective. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Heckler from New York City. Great to hear from you. Great to see you. Why don't we go next to Ivan from Seattle? And Ivan is also a member at joinpacman.com. I very much appreciate that, Ivan. Welcome to the program.
You're welcome. I just wanted to congratulate you on your several awards you've received on your bonus show.
Thank you. Yes. It's sort of like the Trump trophies, where Trump buys a golf club, names the trophies after himself, and then awards himself the trophies. We have created many awards. It's the most hated bonus show by Alex Jones. That's an award we give out. It's, I would argue, the best bonus show. We also won that award. Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Ivan.
I wonder if Biden is going to tweet about it as well.
It's possible.
Okay. So first of all, I'm no longer in Eagle Pass, as you might imagine. I was there, though, long enough to hear Trump saying that we have languages coming to our country that nobody speaks those languages.
Right. Languages no one's ever heard of and nobody speaks.
Yes, which I think it's awesome to have more, you know, a more diverse population in the U.S. But I guess xenophobes take that as an offense against them. But so my question is, you know, Republicans, they always thought of themselves that they are the party of law and order, the party of, you know, personal responsibility, fiscal responsibility. And we've seen many examples of how that is not the case, at least not with the current party. Even Trump was saying that he wants to bring back crime to law and order. I don't know what that means, but personal responsibility, you know, they're always the victims. Fiscal responsibility, they raise the deficit. Protecting kids, well...
Hey, Ivan, I hate to interrupt, and I say this with total peace and love. It sounds like there's a radio on in the background, and I'm wondering if you had a question today.
Yes, so what can you still say? Can you still say that the Republicans is the party of, like... just in the current Republican Party, what do you think? They're not for law and order. They're not for fiscal responsibility. What do you think they're still, what can you give them?
I can't give them any of these things. I mean, listen, they say that they are against business regulation until all of a sudden they want to force businesses to publish their anti-vax and COVID propaganda. Exactly. Suddenly they're very much for business regulation. They say that they are for balancing the budget. And yet George W. Bush and Donald Trump have been two of the presidents, both Republicans, that have blown up the deficit more than anybody else. They say that they are for law and order, except when it comes to the Capitol police officers in January 6th riots or to the FBI or to. Right. So I don't know what they stand for anymore other than opposing Democrats and offering nothing other than contrived social issues to their followers. That's, I think, what they stand for at this point.
Well, I was trying to throw him a lifeline, but if they don't stand for anything, then it's going to be hard. But oh, well, that's all I had for today, David.
All right. Ivan from Seattle. Great to hear from you. Very much appreciate it. Why don't we go next to Fahim from Florida? Fahim from Florida, welcome to the show. What's on your mind today? What's going on? Fahim from Florida, please welcome to the program. Accept my invitation if you'd like to participate. And last chance for Fahim from Florida, who has self-muted now. Fahim, you've got to unmute yourself.
Hey, David, long-time listener to the show. How are you doing today?
Doing well, thank you.
Hey, so I had one question for you today. So with the rise of populism, like what's Bernie Sanders and then like Donald Trump, and also like now you have the third party candidate, what's his name?
Robert F. Kennedy Jr.?
Yes, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. So what do you think the future of U.S. politics looks like with the rise of populism? And if Donald Trump, if he gets defeated after that, how do you think, where do you think it goes?
Listen, it's so difficult to make these broad ranging predictions, but I hope that I'm not naive in thinking that if Trump loses in November, it's not the end of Trumpism, but it's the end of a bunch of it. It's a big destruction of part of Trumpism. And that with Joe Biden getting an additional 4 years, and then we would have 8 years of a decidedly more in the direction of social democracy, although not as much as I would like, decidedly not primarily populist democratic rule. I think that both the sort of populist rhetoric that's become popular and MAGA Trumpism will have suffered significant setbacks. Now, where that gets us and puts us in 2028, I don't pretend to know, but I do think that a Biden victory and a Trump loss in 2024 will hamper the pseudo populist rhetoric that's been used to quite honestly to deceive a lot of people, and also will really, really injure MAGA Trumpism, where hopefully it won't be dead, but it'll hopefully be on it in its last breaths.
I'm surprised you answered that way, because like with Vivek Ramaswamy, I feel like, you know, with figures like him and like, you know, Elon Musk also like, you know, putting kerosene in the fire, if that's a phrase I can put it as. But like with figures like those, I think like, you know, it might be on the rise like from here on out.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Elon Musk has a bunch of right wing ideas, but fundamentally he'll attach himself to any movement that strikes him as interesting. And it doesn't have to be MAGA and it doesn't have to be a populist movement. So I don't know that I agree with that. Listen, at the end of the day, we're all just guessing and we're going to have to wait and see. And the first part of it is let's get through the November election. That's my suggestion.
David, thank you for having us today.
All right. Fahim from Florida, let's take a very quick break. We're going to go right back to Discord for more calls in a moment. So stay with me. Today's sponsor, Ground News, is an app and website that quickly shows you how news is being covered across the political spectrum, adding context and making it easy to understand the polarizing events like the election season that we're in. If you're watching this on YouTube, Donald Trump and Joe Biden secured their party's nominations for a historic presidential rematch. So I'll be looking at Ground News's election page for minute to minute updates on the issues that matter most and the blind spots in the left and right's election coverage. So, for example, check out the breakdown on why the GOP's Biden impeachment appears to be falling apart. Ground News found more than 20 articles published on this, but I can see it's a near total blind spot for people only following right-leaning news. I wonder why. And looking over here, many of these articles come from reliable sources, with each giving me some new detail. And reading their summary of this from each political viewpoint really just gets me up to speed in seconds on any issue. So make separating fact from noise easier this election by going to ground.news/Pacman. My viewers get 40% off their unlimited access Vantage plan, making it just $5 a month. That's ground.news/Pacman for 40% off. The link is in the podcast notes. Let's go back to Discord and hear from a few more people, as we like to do on the Friday show. Let's go to Mr. Mosley from Dallas, Texas. Mr. Mosley, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hi, can you hear me, dude?
Yes, I can.
Hey, I was just wondering, like, with the whole Israel and Gaza thing, like, how come when Hamas does kill civilians, it's considered terrorism, but when Israel does it, it's like moral, righteous? Like, what's the difference here?
Who says that?
I hear a lot of commentators, like on mainstream media, MSNBC, CNN, that don't like the way they talk about Israel. It's not the same way that they talk about Hamas.
Okay.
It killed more civilians than Hamas.
Well, listen, there's two different things. That your first assertion was that what they're saying is that when Israeli civilians die, it's terrorism, but when Gazan civilians die, it's moral. I asked you who said that, and now you're taking a different claim, which I think is maybe one we can engage with more, which is just that there's different treatment of Israel and Gaza. Is that more fair? Is that what you meant?
Correct, correct.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, listen, there's two different things here. One is there are some media outlets that have a bias one way or the other, and that can explain how they cover the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. There's another aspect to this also, which is that there's a difference between civilians as collateral damage, which is still tragic, but different than a policy of finding and killing civilians. Now, I know just by saying that, lots of people will be furious with me and they'll say, David, Israel does have a policy of deliberately targeting civilians. We're not going to be able to have that fight right here, but at least theoretically, Mr. Mosley, does it make some sense to you that there's a difference between a military carrying out operations and accidentally killing civilians? We could say not enough concern, disregard, but different than Hamas, for example, saying let's find civilians to kill of no military or strategic value whatsoever. At least theoretically, do you agree that there is a difference between the two things?
Yes, but I have seen videos online where there's like drone footage of like they're just aiming at people that are just like walking or
yeah.
with their kids. They have white flags, like they even killed some Israeli hostages just because like they're just indiscriminately just like killing
people. So there's four different things you mentioned there for, and it's impossible to, you mentioned four completely different things, and it's really difficult in the scope of this show without analyzing each individually to think them through. I am aware that over the last 10 days, there was a video floating around purporting to show drone strikes on random Palestinian civilians. And that was the initial narrative. I read up a little bit about it. One of the things that seems to be very clear is that this is so crazy to think about it this way, but the idea that Israel would take the time and incur the cost to randomly target four civilians just walking down the road doesn't comport with anything we know about how the Israeli military operates. You can say a lot of things about the Israeli military, including that they don't have enough concern for civilian casualties, that they carry out operations in locations where any reasonable person will expect that civilians are going to be killed. You can, and I share a lot of those criticisms. I struggle to think that they are going to, quite frankly, waste ordnance on four random civilians walking down a road. And also some of the claims made about that video, like that the video was recovered. I think someone said it was recovered from fallen drones. Apparently, the unencrypted videos like that aren't even stored in the drones. You know, so I guess my point here is with each, you mentioned four things just like in passing. Every single one of those, if we really want to understand it and study it, we probably need a couple hours to dissect each one. So I would just say, Mr. Mosley, do what you can to really get to primary sources on a bunch of this stuff.
I got you. And if I can just ask one last question.
Sure.
Do you know why our government is so like committed and loyal to Israel? What exactly are we getting out of this partnership that we have with them? Because it just seems like it's causing more trouble than what it's worth,
You're
it
saying,
seems
what
like.
does the U.S. government see as the reason to be involved with Israel?
Correct, correct.
Oof. There are so many different answers depending on when you want the question answered and who you ask, but everything from a desire for stability in the region that is advantageous both militarily and economically is one aspect of it. The historical ties dating all the way back to World War II and how supportive Israel is linked to other allies. I mean, here's the thing. It depends who you ask. You will get a completely different answer. There are those who say it's a partnership made out of the military industrial complex exclusively. Sort of hard to believe, but maybe that's a part of it. Every one of these questions is awesome that you're asking, and they all require a ton of research to be able to answer in a satisfactory way.
I get it. And I know I'm out of time, and I appreciate you answering my questions, dude.
Mr. Mosley from Dallas, thanks so much. Glad you're thinking about this stuff, and I appreciate the call. Let's go next to DeMori. DeMori from Texas. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hey, David. Thanks for calling on me. I just had a quick qu or a couple quick questions. The first one was, and it was really confusing to me because I don't know anybody who uses Truth Social, sorry, Troth Central, and how the valuation was yesterday when they went public was nearly $8 billion, when it seems they make no money. But I mean, I'm not a finance major or anything like
No,
that,
no,
so
no.
that's
Well, you know, it's making me question whether I know anything about finances, to be honest, Demori. It doesn't make any sense. You're absolutely right. I mean, let me make the strongest argument I can, right? So you look at the numbers. The numbers for Troth Central in the last 9 months of 2023, or the first 9 months, in a 9 month period, they made $3 million. So you say to yourself, $3 million, there's a lot of independent shows that make $3, $4, $5 million, and they have a reasonable staff. And, you know, so that doesn't sound like a lot of money to start with. You then see they incurred $50 million in expenses during that same period of time. And somehow we're supposed to believe it's worth $5, $6, $7, $8 billion. For comparison, and, oh, and by the way, it has only 500,000 users. For comparison, Reddit, which is one of the busiest websites in the world by traffic, recently IPO'd with an almost identical valuation of $5 to $7 billion. How is this possible? So the first answer, DeMori, is it's not possible. What this is Trump's friends and cronies buying up the stock on a completely implausible valuation in order to appease Trump or try to funnel money to Trump, even though it's not totally clear Trump can really use or benefit from this money in the immediate. The shares are locked up for 6 months. Who knows? That's one explanation. It's all completely bogus. Now, let me give you a different explanation. Trump merged Truth Social with the Trump Media something or other group. And maybe you could make the argument that through their connections and maybe other properties they own or control, I don't know, that there's some future potential valuation here that is somewhere approximating where it is. But I feel stupid almost making this argument, DeMori, because I just don't see it. None of it's making any sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go with that. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they know something I don't. Real quick, second one, real fast. Yesterday, or even maybe it was early in the morning when that big ship crashed into the bridge. Twitter, the right wing has been going crazy about DEI caused it and how the mayor is an example of DEI. It was just literally crazy for me to see that on there.
There's
I just
we
wanted to.
talked about that earlier this week. There is no evidence right now for any of the conspiracy theories that they are talking about. There is no evidence that DEI or diversity hires caused the bridge collapse. There's no evidence that it was a cyber attack. There's no evidence that Joe Biden had anything to do with it, or the mayor who happens to be black, or any of it. I'm seeing the usual suspects come up with the usual conspiracy theories, and I've seen no evidence for them whatsoever.
Right. All right. Thank you for calling on me. I appreciate it.
All right, Demori from Texas, great to hear from you. Why don't we go next to, let's go to Vermont. Z from Burlington, Vermont. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hey, David, could you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, I work in the legal cannabis industry in my state, and okay. I was recently reading an article from Politico called Broken Promises, and it was talking about how in the beginning stages of legalization in the United States, there was promises to people who were affected by the drug war to get into the industry and have a pathway to strive in it. But it eventually happened that mostly white wealthy men are running the industry. Basically what I'm getting to is that they have made regulations so strict that it's not allowed a lot of people who have been ostracized from the drug war to get into the industry. And I was just wondering, with federal legalization on the table, if that would help with that process.
You know, I don't know enough about the issue. So let me see if I understand what you're telling me. There's been an effort made to say that there are certain folks who were previously, we could say, mistreated by the drug war, encouraging them to get into the legal cannabis industry. Am I understanding that part correctly?
Yes.
Okay. And part of the problem is that because in many states, you're required to have certain amounts of funding for the license and certain amount of funding in the bank and all of these different things, money for the facility and renovation, sometimes security, or you need to hire extra police for traffic if the place is busy, that even though there's been an effort made to get folks involved in the industry legally, in practice, there are all these financial and other regulatory obstacles that prevent them from getting involved.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in my state, they made it so that we can only sell product that is made here. And so the people who own the massive cultivations and the farms have already owned land in the state for a very long time and probably are already wealthy. And right. There's just a lot of people getting into the industry based on the business side of it rather than the passion for cannabis.
I don't know enough about it to say what needs to happen, but what you're telling me has happened in other industries as well, that they quickly get taken over by a few players with money rather than those who are most passionate. I don't know what the solution is, but I think your instinct that some kind of federal legalization or decriminalization would be part of what might help, but that's not really going to solve the money issue. So that's an area that needs to be looked at more closely.
Right. Well, thank you for my call, David. Appreciate you.
All right, no problem. Z from Burlington, Vermont. An important question, certainly. Let's go to Patrick from Switzerland. Patrick from Switzerland, welcome to the program. What's on your mind? What's going on today? Patrick from Switzerland, please accept my invitation so that we can talk.
Hello.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I have two questions for you. It's going to be pretty quick. I'm listening to you from Europe from a long time. I'm on the left, so I'm telling that. So my first question is, I don't understand the problem with gun in the US, because in Switzerland, we have 1 billion or one people living there and no mass shooting because of regulation. What stopped the US to put some common sense regulation on guns?
You're saying, why don't we have more common sense regulations in the United States?
I'm gonna give you an example. In Switzerland, you can have a gun pretty easily. A little harder than in the US, but pretty easily.
Yep.
Like if I broke a law, like I'm doing speeding over 30 miles an hour over the speed limit or something like this, they're gonna take my gun, because if you can't respect a basic law like not speeding, you can't have a gun. And how that work in Switzerland? It worked pretty well. And why people are so afraid? If you're a good person, you should have your gun and not being taken from you. So why are people, Americans are so afraid of that?
You're saying, why are Americans afraid of their guns being taken?
Yeah.
Oh, well, a lot of it is propaganda, because there's been no widespread effort to take anybody's guns. You know, I mean, we had an assault weapons ban in the 90s, but big picture, there are some limitations on the guns you can own or buy. There are limitations on certain other elements, but part of it is propaganda. The American right wing, as well as the NRA, continue to insist Democrats are desperate. They're going to come. They're going to take your guns. And it's not actually something, you know, Barack Obama famously said towards the end of his presidency, I've been here 8 years. There's more guns floating around than when I started. We haven't taken anybody's guns, but we do need common sense regulation. So to answer the specific question you're asking, a lot of the reason people are afraid of their guns being, quote, taken is because the gun industry and the Republican Party circulate propaganda claiming that that's what Democrats want to do.
No, thank you very much, because I couldn't understand from Europe that fear that people have.
Yeah. All right, Patrick.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. Have a great afternoon.
All right. Patrick from Switzerland. Great to hear from you. And let's go next to. No, I'm out of time. Let's go to a break. Let's go to a break. We will take calls again and much more program coming up right after this. Many in the audience know my first language is Spanish. I learned English later when I moved to the United States. And these days I do a fair amount of traveling and I always make an effort to learn some of the new language before I get to the country. I've tried a bunch of methods for this. I keep coming back to the app Babbel, because with Babbel, you really can start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. Instead of paying hundreds of dollars for classes or fooling yourself with language apps that are basically just simple games, Babbel is designed by real people for real conversations. All of Babbel's tools are approachable. They are rooted in real life situations. They're delivered with conversation-based teaching. You might have seen on my Instagram, I was recently in France. Babbel got me ready last minute. I got to France. I was ready to order food, ask for directions, talk to people at stores and hotels without having to use my phone to translate. There are studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others that continue to prove that Babbel is better. One study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is like a semester of that language at college. With over 10 million subscriptions sold, Babbel is real language learning for real conversations. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get 50% off a one-time payment for a lifetime Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/Pacman. You get access for life for half off. Get 50% off at babbel.com/Pacman, spelled BABBEL.com/Pacman. Rules and restrictions may apply. The link is in the podcast notes. All right, it is time for Friday feedback. The email address for Friday feedback is info@davidpacman.com, but we will often feature YouTube comments, Instagram replies, TikTok comments. You never know what might show up in the Friday feedback. And we start today with Patrick Welch, who says, David, with tears in my eyes, I am crying because your sweater hurts my eyes. That collar is so big that it looks like it is going to eat your head. So listen, let me make an admission about the whole sweater thing. Sometimes I wear sweaters semi-satirically, in that I know that they trigger some people, and I find it interesting to trigger people with my sweaters. But for the most part, people criticize sweaters that I like, including ones that I've gotten as gifts. There's one that people say looks like a teddy bear, which actually is a very nice French sweater. Beautiful, beautiful sweater that I received as a gift. And it may just be that your fashion sense is not well calibrated, or that mine isn't well calibrated. I don't know. And I know that I will be getting attacked for my shawl collar that I am wearing right now. So on the sweater stuff, the sweaters are going to continue until the morale improves. That's where I will leave it. That's what I will say. It's not the most important issue, but gosh darn it, if it isn't one that is on the minds of many people. More substantively now, Chicago Bears 1992 responded on YouTube with the comment that, quote, been watching David since 2019, consider myself a moderate conservative, registered Republican, always despised Trump, can't stand Marjorie Taylor Greene, Boebert, and everyone else Trump has spawned. I voted for Romney, Clinton, and Biden. I'll be voting for Joe this year. I think this is great. Okay, there are more reasonable Republicans, and this is going to be an important message when it comes to a message we're about to look at with regard to division in the country. This is a really important message. There are reasonable Republicans where we can have disagreements about tax rates. We can have disagreements about foreign policy. We can have disagreements about what social welfare program should we have. That's all what I would consider sane political disagreement, over which I'm glad to disagree and argue for my perspective. When I see messages like this, there's a portion of my audience that comes back and says, David, this is the proof that Biden is a right winger. The proof Biden's a right winger is that there are people abandoning Republicans to vote for Biden. That means Biden's right wing. And I would say the opposite. In fact, what's going on is that Biden, by executing a reasonable progressive agenda without putting people down, without demonizing, without all of the drama, he has actually united the country to a degree in that the reasonable Republicans who say, hey, policy disagreements are one thing, but wanting the downfall of democracy goes too far. I'm going to vote Biden over Trump for that reason. And in polling, it shows that preserving democracy ranks at the top of priorities for voters. They are saying, I'm going to go beyond party and vote for a guy whose progressive agenda, to the degree that it's progressive, it's somewhat progressive, his progressive agenda is not enough of a turnoff in the context of whether we're going to keep democracy. And so I welcome it. It's not because Biden's right wing. It's because people recognize that democracy is at stake. Now, that gets us to this next message from Priority Target. Priority Target wrote, the louder the voices of the David Pakmans of the world get, the more divided we become. I could not disagree with this more vehemently or even more vehemently, depending on your preference. On this program, we don't advocate a politics of division. Now, every show that is creating content is going to do what it can to generate an audience. And so sometimes we pick hyperbolic titles or whatever the case may be. But at its core, this is a program that says we should all be able to come together over some basic things. The importance of preserving democracy, the importance of an environment in which individuals are free to be who they are. And if they say, hey, you know what, my side has abandoned democracy, I'm going to go with the other side, at least right here. We welcome them. We don't sow division. We say, come on over. We all recognize how important democracy is. And so if I had my way, we wouldn't be more divided. We would be more united in that which in which we would be able to say, here's a whole category of. First of all, we would be able to say, here are the facts. Let's all start with the facts. We can't even start with the facts anymore because there's disagreement over what the facts even are from some of these extremists. But in my world, we would be far more united because we would say, hey, science, empiricism, and data have confirmed here's our set of facts. We'll all start with that. Just starting with the same facts will unite rather than divide. And then we would say, we all agree areas in which there really shouldn't be political disagreement. There are areas where we should all say, of course, the preservation of democracy is a gold standard for starting political conversations. And now we can respectfully talk about what's the best way to deal with climate change. What's the best way to keep public education working? What's the best way to maintain entrepreneurship while at the same time having a tax system that makes sure no one falls too far? All of these areas we would be able to more respectfully disagree on because we would be united on so many of the basics. That's my politics. So I disagree with that comment completely. Mr. V says Hillary Clinton was right about Tulsi when she thought that Tulsi would switch. No matter if you like or dislike Hillary, on this statement, she was 100% correct. Saw the red flags and warned people about her. Yeah, I still get really bummed out about the portion of the left that got completely bamboozled. They were just enamored of Tulsi Gabbard as if she was God's gift to the progressive movement. The only real liberal, the only Democratic candidate who's against the forever wars. It was so pathetically transparent. Many people in my audience saw it for what it was. Some people in my audience did not. And I congratulate and really respect the people in my audience who have come to me in the last couple years and said, David, you know what? You were right. I'm embarrassed I fell for it, but you were right. I was completely wrong about Tulsi. I respect the people who have come to me and said that, because there are lots who are just digging their heads in the sand and insisting, well, no, even though she's speaking at CPAC and Mar-a-Lago, somehow Tulsi was still the right choice for Democrats in 2020. Give me a break. Give me a break. It's sad what's happened. And on this issue, Hillary was right. Curdane says, show me a video of Trump going blank for 5+ seconds on end. Show me Trump's travel, speech, and rally schedule versus Biden's once a week, 3-minute engagement. Relax, put them side by side. Let's get some context. I'll believe you if you can show me how you are unbiased. Listen, we have now had a number of experts come on the show and talk about what we are observing with Biden versus what we are observing with Trump. We're going to have another one coming up on Monday. We have looked in detail at every aspect of this. Joe Biden's schedule is packed. I don't know where Curdane gets the idea that Biden's doing 3 minutes a week. Biden's traveling across 8 time zones and doing multi-hour meetings with high-level officials. No one's coming out on either side saying Biden's confused, Biden's disoriented, he's flustered. Not a single person from the Biden administration nor any of the governments that Biden is regularly meeting with is coming out and saying, that was weird. Biden was so tired after 10 minutes, he had to be taken somewhere for a B12 shot or for rest. He's spending hours with world leaders. We're not hearing a peep about anything is wrong as far as that goes. Biden looks more frail because he is elderly. Biden exercises regularly. He eats better than Trump. He's not obese. He has a stutter. That's true. On the other hand, look at what all of these experts have told us about Trump. Look at what we witness about Trump. It's not even a comparison. But here's the end game. Anyone who's writing a message to me like this, do you think that Curdane would change their mind and maybe vote Biden if I convince them just on this cognitive issue? Obviously not. This is someone who's bought the whole thing hook, line, and sinker. And so it doesn't even really matter to argue with them at the end of the day. Brad Blocks wrote in and says, as a Haley supporter, I'm all in for Biden this coming November. Trump has changed the Republican Party forever, and it's no longer the party I was once part of. I urge all my other fellow Haley supporters and moderate Republicans to vote against Trumpism and hope with his defeat, may the GOP be one step closer to returning to normal. I say the same thing. A radicalized MAGA GOP moves the Overton window to the right and hurts progressives too. So I would love an environment where Republicans are more like Romney and McCain and Christie. I still have disagreements, but they are at least normal people with whom we can hash out how to move forward on a number of different issues, rather than this borderline cult or actual cult that we're dealing with right now. Robert wrote in with an interesting comparison. He says Biden is old and Trump is old and a fascist. I will take old over old and fascist every day of the week and twice on Sundays. Well said. Couldn't possibly add anything to that. Barry Parrott said, please, dude, what can you say about the current administration? Name one policy Biden has put forth that has actually helped the country. Come on, give me one. So I can only think of a couple things Biden has done. CHIPS and Science Act, Inflation Reduction Act, infrastructure bill, more student loan forgiveness than any president in history, capping insulin and inhalers at $35 a month, getting big pharma to the table to negotiate price caps on the 10 most commonly used Medicare drugs, small changes to Obamacare accessibility to get us to the highest percentage of insured Americans, I believe, in American history, getting us out of Afghanistan, reestablishing sensible relationships with our historical Western allies. I could go on and on and on. So there's plenty of meat on the bone there. It's just a lot of people really don't want to hear it. And it doesn't matter what list I give them. They're voting for Trump. And so the way to win is going to be turnout. Let's convince them to change their minds when we can. But it's not a wholesale strategy for winning. The wholesale strategy for winning is voter turnout. So we've got to do it. We have a great bonus show coming up for you today. Sign up at joinpacman.com to get instant access to the bonus show. You can use the coupon code SAVEDEMOCRACY24. And remember, we have the three children's books now available at davidpacman.com/book. These are in libraries. These are in people's homes. The first book, Think Like a Detective, A Base for Critical Thinking for Kids. The second book, Think Like a Scientist, An Introduction to the Scientific Method for Kids. And number three, out last week, look at that beautiful color, Think Like a Voter, How Voting Works, What We Vote On, Basics About Government, and the Importance of Voting for Kids. Incredible. They're all at davidpacman.com/book. They're available on Amazon. They're available on barnesandnoble.com. Check them out. Bonus show coming up, and I'll see you on Monday.